You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, where we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specialising in food and science. And this podcast is one of our packaging series, but it's specifically about the plastics pact. And to tell us all about it, we have Peter Skelton, Head of Strategic Partnerships from RAP. Hello, Peter.
Hi there. Morning, everyone.
Thank you very much for joining us. I believe you've got the teenagers in a cage somewhere else in the house, so we might have a bit of silence for a bit.
Indeed.
Okay, so before we get into the plastics pact itself, can we just start with a slightly broader view of your world? So if you could tell us a bit about the Courtauld Commitment 2025 and why it's important.
Yeah, sure. So RAP's been working in the areas of food waste, textiles and plastics for over 20 years, and we do lots of really interesting stuff, technical projects, working with citizens, but the voluntary agreement is one of our core kind of ways of working, and it's a way we can engage with businesses, with governments, with local authorities, with citizens, and the Courtauld Commitment was the first of these voluntary agreements, started back in 2005 with the key retailers, grocery retailers in the UK, has now grown to be, you know, a huge sector-wide initiative looking at tackling food waste from farm to fork, and is having great impact with industry and citizens across the UK. So actually, UK is doing some fantastic work reducing food waste by 7% was the last public reduction.
Now, RAP works a lot in this area of voluntary agreements. Why is the word voluntary important?
We favour the voluntary agreement, and it's got great benefits over, say, other things which are, tend to be just straight legislation or just letting businesses get on and do their own actions and have their own individual targets. The voluntary agreement has the benefits of trying to tackle those issues, such as plastic packaging or food waste, which go beyond the realm of any one business because it involves policy, the whole supply chain, engaging with citizens, engaging with local authorities. And that's what the voluntary agreement does. It brings everyone together on a collaborative, pre-competitive platform to tackle some of these systemic problems, such as plastics packaging. And we can actually do things very quickly, dynamically. It fosters innovation. But we do need legislation to underpin and align with what the voluntary agreement is trying to do as well.
So the voluntary agreement is sort of is sometimes used as this sort of the warning shot before regulation happens, yeah. I guess, in certain areas of the food industry, certainly.
Absolutely. And we have to make sure the voluntary agreement model works and delivers. Otherwise, it'll be quite rightly criticised by NGOs, the media, and the public. So part of RAP's role is to actually hold businesses to account, publicly report the progress of our voluntary agreements, which we do every year. And that's one of the key roles that RAP undertakes.
And then the voluntary agreements that you broker include things like the Hospitality and Food Service Agreement, sort of sustainable clothing action plans as well. So there's a broad range of things that you're working on. But let's Indeed. Come now to the Plastics Pact. What is the Plastics Pact? Give us the pitch for it.
So, as you say, we've done lots of work on plastics for 20 years, originally under the Courtauld Commitment umbrella, where we focused on packaging reduction and lightweighting. Did some fantastic projects with the retailers and brands. The thing that we had not focused on, and most people hadn't, was the leakage, was actually those small bits of packaging, the problematic packaging. We'd focused on the big categories, the milk bottles, the PET bottles, because that's where scale often starts. So in 2017, we obviously had a lot of challenge from the media to say, actually, this plastics problem is not fixed. It's too linear. So we put our heads together with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, who are leaders in circular economy plastic thinking, and came up with the Plastics Pact. So in it, in the nutshell, it's trying to move the plastic system, not just one format or one polymer, move the whole plastic packaging system from a linear to a circular way of thinking. And this requires and works around four key targets to actually turn the tap off, challenge and reduce the amount of plastics that are not necessary, that are problematic, that won't be recycled. And then around three other key targets, make sure that everything we are using with plastic actually is designed for the end of life as well as for life. The third target is really powerful and it's important about making sure there's no point in making something recyclable if it's not actually recycled. So working with citizens, working with local authorities, how can we get the recycling rates up? And the fourth target, again, is crucial, and it's to say we need the end markets, we need demand for recycled material, otherwise we won't have circularity. So it's a new way of thinking to transform the plastic system, and it requires the whole value chain to be involved, which is what we managed to secure under the plastics pact, which is great.
I mean, that sounds like, on a positive way of saying it, that sounds ambitious. On a sort of more realistic, that sounds flipping hellish to try and achieve. So you need circularity to make this happen. So presumably it's produced and then it's reused and goes back into the system. What are the weak points in that circle?
So in some ways it is hellishly challenging, but also in some ways compared with food, it's actually in some ways a more streamlined supply chain. The number of people actually in players producing plastic and the number of players actually collecting it and recycling it are relatively few, unlike maybe the agricultural supply chain. So again, as with most voluntary agreements, we need the key players to be involved. So we started and launched 2 years ago with 40 businesses. We've now got over 80 businesses. And they represent over 85% of the plastic placed on around products that are sold in supermarkets. So the challenge is actually, once we've got the businesses around the table, as it were, is to make sure that we've got and work on those areas of key weakness, as you say. The key areas were, and still remain to some extent, making sure the packaging is designed in a way that is designed for the end of life. And we've done huge amounts of work on that. It's been great progress.
Can you just explain what give us an example of that?
Yeah, so packaging design was very much led by the marketing departments, and actually aesthetics, colour, shelf standout were and remain obviously key factors. But because something is maybe coloured in a non-detectable black pigment, or because something is coloured in a certain colour, it reduces the value or its ability to be recycled massively. I mean, Coca-Cola moved from, and many other packaging manufacturers moved from coloured PET to clear PET. That single move means that that clear bottle can come back again as another drinks bottle or another tray, and means its value to the recycler has actually gone up many fold. So those sort of design decisions are key and as part of what the Plastics Pact is doing. The other key challenge is making sure there's a demand for that. And we, as you were well aware, rely and still do to some extent on export markets for taking a lot of our waste plastics. The Chinese market was our biggest market. 60% of what we collected, we exported. So the Plastics Pact is also focused on making sure we've got the capacity to treat and recycle more of our own waste. And we're seeing fantastic strides forward in this area with Plastic Pact members, the waste sector, the recyclers declaring to putting in and building more recycling factories in the UK so we can actually recycle far more of our own plastics. And about 280,000 tonnes of extra capacity has been built or is being built since the launch of the Plastics Pact.
Now, as a consumer, I've read a lot about how difficult it is for manufacturers to shift from black plastic packaging. As a consumer, I couldn't care less about it being black. If it's clear PET, just blimmin' use it. Why is it that manufacturers say that it's difficult to change?
Well, they did say it's difficult for many years, and actually the power of the pact and the power of pressure from NGOs, from governments, from consumers, we've seen more change probably in the last 2 years than probably the last 10 years in terms of the focus on getting the design right. So this is where what's been really powerful is because businesses have signed up to these public targets, KPIs have been set, you know, businesses have changed their processes. So actually now the marketing people are saying, well, we don't have a choice now. We will move to clear or to a different color. And actually once one person moves away, it's much easier for the other retailers and brands to follow. So some packs need to be a color to stop light ingress and things, but generally it is about aesthetics and appeal.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, in terms of the plastics pact, and what are the overall measures of success? I mean, I know you got 85% of, you're sort of covering 85% of plastic products that you think now. Is that the main measure of success, or are there other things that are part of your core ambitions?
Absolutely. And the four targets are quantified, time-bound targets. So this is what we've reported against our first sort of progress just before Christmas. So the target one, to eliminate the problematic items, you know, we actually work with our members, and it's again, through collaboration, agreeing what we could tackle now, what needed further work. So just 8 items of plastic, which didn't actually represent that many tons, but actually represents 1 billion items of plastic, which were never going to be recycled, very easily littered. The members, the businesses have voluntarily said, we will phase that out of our business by the end of 2020. We won't wait to 2025, by the end of 2020. So that's, again, that's the power of the voluntary agreement, where businesses kind of in this competitive space pledge to take action. So we've seen great strides in people just phasing out plastic straws, expanded polystyrene packaging in food service, things that are a challenge to the recyclers. We're seeing, we do need more work, and the big challenge is to how we get that recycling rate up nationally, which is currently about 47% of all our plastic packaging is currently recycled. And so we need, the target is 70, so we've got a long way to go in there. So there's lots of progress. It's making the collective progress, particularly around recycled content. We are currently at about 11% of recycled content. We need to get to 30. So there's lots of work to be done. What's really encouraging with the plastics pact, it's actually influenced quite a lot of the government's policy decisions. So the latest thinking on extended producer responsibility and the packaging tax for recycled content exactly aligned with the plastics pact.
Now, I've spoken to quite a few manufacturers and packaging designers and various people who are in the middle of all this, and I have heard quite a few of them say everything's recyclable. It's just that the recyclers aren't doing it, or it's not being, you know, the recycling is there, the material just isn't getting to them. Are they ducking the blame, or do you think they have a point?
I mean, lots of things are technically recyclable, but this is where it needs to have the economics of it. You know, there is no point in collecting something if there's not an end market. So, and this is the challenge, particularly with reduced oil price and virgin price. Who is going to actually pay for the collection and the recycling of it unless not a strong demand? This is why moving to simpler, fewer polymers, to clear plastics, natural colours, does drive the economics of it. So part of the plastics pact is we are working on where can we actually eliminate some of those challenging plastics, such as PVC, such as polystyrene, to make the economics just more attractive. And that's why also the end market, and actually looking at how can we develop different end markets for some of these materials. So it's complex. But the benefit of the pact is you've got the recyclers talking around the table with the retailers, with the brands, with the people who actually make the packaging. And that sort of collaboration had never happened before the pact, not in the breadth that it is currently. So that's what's really encouraging. So we're seeing big strides, but again, there is a lot of challenge, particularly on the economics of the recycling that again, that's improving as we make the inbound material simpler and more designed to be recycled.
Yeah. Now, every now and then, a story drops in the media which says we've developed a polystyrene consuming bacteria and various sort of little innovations which really capture the public's imagination. But are they really part of the tackling? I mean, it's great having innovation, but is it really something much more fundamental that will shift us from that 46% to 47% up to 70%? Is it more about getting the big companies to talk to each other?
There is definitely need for innovation, and there's some fantastic support again from UK government coming through the smart sustainable plastic packaging proposals, and we're working with the R&D community to make sure the research is aligned and supporting the plastics pack, which is fantastic. But you're right, a lot of this is not necessarily new innovation. It's about doing better what we know already, and it's about scale, and it's about the economics, which is why things like reducing the amount of small, less recyclable plastic packaging from the material stream just makes the economics flow. So there's a lot of it can be achieved by just being better at what we know, but there's also, we do need innovation. So what's been really encouraging is seeing the trials and the developments on reuse and refill, which have been kicked around for quite a few years, actually starting to really be taken up and invested in. So we've seen retailers, we've seen brands looking at all manner of reuse and refill innovations in store, in their operations, to actually say we can't just recycle, we need to actually look at how we reduce and also how we reuse and refill more packaging as well.
So there's both the sort of the specificity of those little innovations but the broader thing that you're working on really is communication, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, so for instance, the humble plastic bottle, every single plastic bottle in our homes, the shampoo bottles, the bleach bottles, the drinks bottles, they are all recyclable. They've all got a very good value. We're actually, everyone has a bin or bag outside their house to recycle those plastic bottles. And we're recycling about 60% of all those plastic bottles, which means 40% are going to landfill or going to energy from waste. And that's a loss of resource. It's a loss of value. It's a lot of loss of material. So it is about the innovations, the new technology. A lot of it is about behavior change and getting people to understand why they should recycle, what the benefits are, and motivate them in a positive way.
Do you get frustrated by the sort of the disinformation about recycling? There's a lot of apocryphal stories and lots of gossip about things like, well, what's the point? No, most of it gets chucked into landfill anyway. Is there a lot of, do you get frustrated about those sorts of stories that just seem to work against the whole concept of recycling and reuse and reuse?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, there's two, we spent a lot of time at the start of the sort of the plastics focus trying to just work and help businesses go through the sort of the labyrinth of decision making, because a lot of people thought, well, we'll just switch out of plastics, we'll just switch into compostables. And we were often saying to people, well, we need to really avoid a knee-jerk reaction away from plastics, particularly with our food waste hat on, to say the last thing we want to do is to demonize plastics and cause more food waste, which is a far higher environmental impact. So we, through the Plastics Pack, can help businesses make those informed decisions. The other key thing is, as you say, is about, in a positive way, communicating with consumers about why actually we need plastics sometimes, what's their role. We just launched a few weeks ago a social media campaign called Clear on Plastics. It will grow and you'll see more of it. But this Clear on Plastics campaign is fantastic, and it's being led by RAP, and it's really trying to, in a positive way, go through some of those myths and some of those mistruths and actually explain to people why, what they can do and some of these information. So yeah, I urge your listeners to check it out, Clear on Plastics. It'll grow. There's some really good materials in there that businesses through the pact are using in their own channels.
That sounds really good. Now, if we just step away from your role in RAP and just talk about how you feel about things, what are the frustrations within this area? And I'm really interested in what you, Peter, think about this rather than what RAP thinks about this? What are the doors that you haven't been able to open? What are the frustrating bits that haven't quite worked?
I mean, it's a good challenge. I mean, I personally get very frustrated by littering. You know, I live in a rural area, and it's a big bugbear when you see people or see the result of people just throwing valuable materials, aluminium, plastics, cardboard, you know, just in the countryside. What's really encouraging, actually, is having worked in plastics and RAP for over 16 years, the fact that plastics is now in the focus for so many people, all ages, all demographics, you know, we see people actually, my children, my teenagers, they understand plastics much more now than they did 2 years ago. They understand more about why we want to be able to, what they can do to be part of the solution.
And are your kids enthused by this?
Positive. I think that,
Are your kids good at recycling? Have they taken it all on board?
As you can imagine, they probably they probably hate it that I'm so onto them. But no, they're pretty good actually.
Yeah. And what's the dream? You know, how far do you think RAP can take this before it has to hand it over to government and regulation and people being forced to do things? Or do you think that could be avoided completely?
So what's really encouraging is actually we are working with the government and seeing the policy landscape change and align with the Plastics Pact. So, you know, the proposed EPR schemes that are coming in will actually mean businesses will fund far more heavily the packaging that they produce. And that
can you define EPR?
Sorry?
What can you define EPR?
Oh, sorry, extended producer responsibility. So it's the way that packaging and other materials have a levy against them that actually helps go to fund the recycling system. And currently we have quite a low cost system, the packaging return note system, which means that in the past it was more about volume maybe rather than over quality. So now through DEFRA and the proposed EPR regulations, it means that businesses will actually pay more for the packaging they place on the market, and that funding will go to support funding collections of more plastics in more local authorities. So there's some really good, important policy reforms coming in 2022 and 2023, and it's unfortunately we have to wait for them to come through, but they will be coming. So I think the policy is important. We've got really hard targets for 2025, so the Plastics Pact is definitely, and RAP is focused on that. And what's really encouraging, from the day we launched this in 2018, we've had a huge interest from businesses and governments and organisations around the world, which is where my role currently focused is about actually how can we support more plastics packs internationally, because actually that's where a lot of the plastic challenge obviously remains.
Now, I mean, leading on from that, the PAC, this is a global network you're trying to set up. Are the challenges the same in all countries, or are there big differences between them?
No, the Plastic Pact as a model has lots of transferable elements. And we're working with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, working with partners in different countries to actually support plastics packs being set up. So they all have maybe different challenges, but the benefit of these four targets that drive circularity is that actually there's lots of common things that we can share in terms of processes, in terms of way of working, that means that they can actually benefit and we can share between us. So a lot of often countries might have an underdeveloped collections infrastructure. You know, we think perhaps our infrastructure and weekly collections is a challenge. You know, lots of countries we're working in Africa and Asia don't have that, and they rely on the informal sector. So they have different challenges, but what is often the same is the plastic bottle, the plastic tray, the plastic bag is the same polymer. What good looks like from a design point of view is often the same. Mm-hmm. The end of life options are often the same. So there's lots of things we can share between the plastics pack, which is why the network is growing at a very healthy rate, and why we're seeing lots of countries wanting to see how they could perhaps adopt a plastics pact for their country.
And how are we doing in the UK compared to other European nations?
It depends on what you mean by how we're doing. So, you know, we are, so in terms of our overall recycling rates, they are broadly comparable with many, you know, leading European countries. What we haven't had and we haven't relied on is a big energy from waste sector. So, you know, a lot of Nordic countries have treated their plastic. They've had less going to residual landfill, or because they're having a lot more energy from waste. We haven't had that reliance, and it does mean that we can actually move to invest in recycling plants and infrastructure where maybe we haven't got this legacy of energy from waste. So we're doing well, but we, like many countries, can do a lot better. I think what we are seeing is the innovations coming out of the Plastics Pact are actually leading the way. So some of those trials I said on reuse, some of the adoption of recycled content, actually the UK is probably leading the way in terms of, say, adopting more recycled content. So some of the big brands are using recycled content in their laundry detergent bottles and things. Often that isn't happening on their ranges in Europe. So we're doing some really good work, but there's a lot more to be done.
And this is obviously, I mean, you're head of strategic partnerships. You're in the thick of industry, really. But how much of this is about industry and how much of it is about consumers and consumer-driven change?
So it won't happen without consumers playing their part. You know, the circularity requires everyone in the value chain to be playing their part. And citizens are a key link. So we say we have our Clear on Plastics campaign. We run the Recycle Now campaign in the UK, working through partners, through local authorities, trying to encourage householders to recycle more, not just plastics, but obviously food waste, textiles, electrical products. And so we require consumers to recycle more. And then that's a complex issue. Part of it is about having access to the facilities to recycle. Part of it is about having the knowledge, what do I recycle, what don't I recycle? So we definitely help with that. And the key one is the motivation. You know, why should I recycle? What's the benefit? And again, through things like our campaigns, we're working with that. So that is a long-term change working through our partners, but absolutely. And that's where businesses and the Plastics Pact have been really supportive. We've seen more businesses get behind our Recycle Week, for instance, which we run every September, and supporting our campaigns than before. So, you know, RAP's communication budget is relatively modest. Working through the Plastics Pact and their channels, their digital platforms, is how we're going to really, you know, shift the needle on this.
Okay. Now, let's just sort of sign off by giving the opportunity to gaze at the future a little bit. What do you think is going to happen in the short term and the long term? And both realistically in terms of what's good and what's bad. What are your predictions?
Well, on the international front, we are seeing, you know, so we're working in South Africa and Chile, Australia, Malaysia. We've got a pipeline of other packs coming forward as well. So from an international point of view, it's a really positive picture. We're going to see more plastic packs innovating, sharing ideas. We're introducing, you know, some quite exciting refill operation ideas from Chile to talk to the UK Plastics Pact. So this global network of organisations sharing innovations, sharing projects, so we don't all have to reinvent the wheel. That is really encouraging. And I think we're going to see a lot more collaboration from pact to pact. I think closer to home, you know, I think we have got some big challenges. The depressed oil price and depressed virgin oil price is really going to test businesses' commitment to using things like recycled material. So we do need the continued pressure and focus from businesses to really commit to that, which is going to be tough. I think looking down the line, I think we want to see far more innovation in things like food grade packaging. So I think it's a really rosy future, but there's lots of challenges. And I think the more that we can harmonize between and share, collaborate between countries and also within a country, we'll get there. I think what's particularly encouraging, say from the UK, is this investment in the infrastructure so we can start to, you know, not only just treat and recycle our own waste, but actually produce this valuable feedstock that other businesses can then use. And the whole principles of circularity is that, and why plastics lends itself very well, is we have the demand for plastic packaging in the UK. We consume it here. Let's treat it. Let's keep the value in the economy and keep that plastic out of the oceans and out of the environment.
Okay, Peter, I think that, I mean, that sounds vital and you know, it can't be a hope. It's got to be a reality, hasn't it, in the near future. Okay, well, thank you so much, Peter Skelton, Head of Strategic Partnerships at RAP, for your time. You've been listening to Food Matters Table Talk podcast. Explore the Food Matters website and see if you can listen to another one. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.